This is the Band School Podcast, where we talk about business, adventure, and mission with your host, Buddy Rathmel.
All right, and welcome to the BAM School Podcast. I'm excited today to introduce you to Mike Sebastian. He was a former agency owner. He exited that, and now he is into short-term rentals, or STRs, as they call them in the industry. And super exciting, after a year of living in an RV, which is many people's dream life, he actually bought a house, and he's going back to regular old living. So we bumped this up a day after bumping it back 2 weeks so that he can fly to Louisville tomorrow and get his new house. But Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I'm glad we both had so much flexibility to move everything around. Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice when you're your own boss and can shift your schedule a little bit. So give me the 60-second version of your life of getting to the point where you had an agency. What happened from birth to agency?
Goodness, there's quite a bit in there. I've lived all across the country, Virginia to California to Washington to the RV to Kentucky. The agency came from reading the 4-Hour Work Week, go figure. Sitting in a job where I was spending $200,000 a month on Google Ads, but my primary responsibility was changing printer cables because they wanted me in the office at 8, leave at 5, do whatever I ask in the middle, and the median age of staff was about 75. That's what forced me like over the edge. I was like, we could do so much more. We could do really good work for you guys. We just need, you know, remote work. We need systems and processes and all that. And then the 4-Hour Work Week sent me over and I was like, I can do this. So,
yeah. Nice. So was your original agency running Google Ads for others?
It was. So I was in college. I went for mechanical engineering. Made it through differential equations and realized that like that was not the path for me. The moment that I announced that I was going to go towards a marketing major instead of a marketing minor, my whole family was like, that makes so much more sense. Like, you're not the engineer type. You're much more. Yeah. So I graduated with marketing, got into marketing, stumbled in. I originally started with email marketing, but I was coding them. I taught myself how to code, and it was before all the WYSIWYG editors and everything. So I was doing database management and emails, and then I stumbled into LinkedIn ads in that industry. It was very B2B based. And then after I got into ads, I was like, this is my niche. There's quick results. There's big, big risk, big reward kind of things on the table. I taught myself that, a lot of YouTube videos, a lot of just playing around with different things in the actual platforms. And then I found a job at this plastics company that was much higher spend and much more reliance on the ads. And that's where I really like honed in on that. I worked there for 2 years. I really honed in on the ad side, really got good at what that was doing. And then Facebook about that time came out with their ad platform. And that's where I was like, all right, this is actually an opportunity. And I rolled out into similar spaces to the plastics company, but then I kind of niched into outdoor gear e-commerce companies. Because the results were so quick to find, which was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's still the case for a lot of people, right? Like, you run ads, you do a halfway decent job. There's usually a quick ROI, obviously dependent upon the niche and how well you've optimized your ad and your landing pages and all those kind of things. But my first money online in 2003 was actually running, I think it was still Google Ads or the original, you know, AdWords way back in the day. Yeah. And running AdWords to a landing page. And this was for Netflix and other like DVD things that we're sending out. I had a lot of like growth that I needed to do as a person. So I actually got my first check and I shut it down because I was like, I'm so much more excited about this than youth ministry. Like, clearly I'm being led astray by the, you know, filthy lucre. Yeah. And I needed to go through some of my own growth process in there, but it was super fun.
That is a real thing though. Like one of the things when I left the marketing space, there was a just constantly, like whether it was listening to the Bible Project or listening to sermons or even certain passages in the Bible where I would read, and I was like, everything's kind of bashing marketing. And I think there's a way to do good marketing, but it's also like, to me, it looks so much like temptation, right? Whereas you can border that line so close that it's like, you're really not like, and there were some of the situations that we would get in is I was working for clients, like they own the company and they asked us to do the marketing. And a lot of times I had to go back to them and say, can you show me how this works? Like, can you show me where this actually, what you're saying, what you're asking me to put in an advertisement is actually doable? And they're like, well, we're building it. And I was like, so this is a lie, right? Because you're saying it's here and it's not here.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of bordering that. And it's definitely, you made a good decision.
Well, and I think at the time, I mean, I wish I had stuck with it a little longer, but for me, that was honestly like a 6-year journey to being like, okay, business is actually something God put in me, and that's why I'm excited about it. But I do think that that time gave me the ability to kind of go, okay, what is most important? How do we do this? You know, how do we operate with integrity? And I actually just saw somebody, you know, that does those interview billionaires on the street little videos. And one of the guys, like the first thing he said was, you have to sell something before it's built. And I like, I have that same thing. It's like, there is a tension, you know, it's like some days it's like you're willing this thing into existence. And there's all kinds of tensions of faith in business for sure.
Yep.
100%. So we had talked about like with the agency piece, you had mentioned how sometimes it just got crazy with the different clients and the different things. And tell me about that process as you grew the business. You had a lot of clients, stress for fulfilling. My business is a little bit, I do Google Business Profiles. So there's not like, you know, money isn't flying out the door day to day. I'm probably a little less stress in my agency, but talk to me about that for you and how that stress kind of built up and pushed you to where you were.
We followed the same path. I think most people do. Our original clients were $300 a month. The clients when I left were upwards of $20,000-$25,000 a month in their retainers. So a lot of growth over a decade. Wasn't a short run by any means. But it was a lot of growth over a decade. I would say the clients got typically easier to work with the bigger that they got because they didn't care as much, right? The $300 a month guys, like, this is all I have. We got to save our business with this. Like, what are we going to do? And I think everyone's heard that story before. The people who are paying $20,000-$25,000 a month are much less hands-on, however, much higher expectations. And with the lower hands-on, that became an issue over time. I think this is every agency owner I've ever talked to has the same thing, where you sign a contract and you say, look, I need X, Y, and Z from you, right? I need image assets. I need copy. I need whatever those handful of things are, access to certain systems. And as soon as I get that, I can hit the ground running. And what would continuously happen, and maybe this is a flaw in myself, totally could be, but what would continuously happen is we would sign the contract. I'd say, hey, where are these things? Where are these things? I'd follow up a week later. Hey, where are these things? I would not get them back. And then a month after that, I'd send an invoice and they'd be like, well, you know, where's the results? We don't have anything from it. And I'm like, well, here's email one and email two and email three and email four. And that led to a lot of tension back and forth. Not every client was that way, but a handful were definitely like taking the cake with that stress. And then it became almost like a light gaslighting scenario where like all of a sudden it was my fault, you know, not they had to pay the invoice. It was my fault. And that became pretty overwhelming towards the end of that continuously happening. And then I think the other angle of stress with the marketing side specifically, or the agency owner side specifically, is when everything's good, typically it's economy based, right? But when the economy is doing really well, everybody wants to double down on their marketing, right? Let's grow our list. Let's sell more things. Let's make a lot more money and pour into marketing so that we can get those things. But then when everything's not going well. It's the opposite, yeah. But the marketing work still has to double down because now we don't have the money to pay you, but we really need the services, you know, in order to stay afloat in the slow side. So what I found is like, there was never a real slowdown. It was always just grind, 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 busy, busy, busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I've shied away from ads, like just because of, I think, that extra stress. Like I basically have had two things. What, you know, I fell in, like I did SEO, you know, I did ads 20 years ago, and then I did SEO like 15 years ago. And then I fell into Google Business 5 years ago. And I do love it because it's a great ROI in general for clients. And there isn't that stress. And even if they don't give me jack, I can still make stuff happen as long as I get access to their account, you know? And have that same issue of like, in fact, some clients, I don't even ask them for assets. I just was like I just told my guy last week, we picked up a new client and I'm like, go on their site. Everything there is, you know, use it, change it, like change the photos, but we'll use that to start, which has made it a lot easier. But I, you know, when I wrote you a couple weeks ago, I was like, oh yeah, it was, that's right. The day we were supposed to meet was like the worst day of my consulting career. I've thankfully wiped that from my mind. Literally the one dude, I waited 3 weeks till today to even send him the invoice. Cause I've made up for both of those, but I missed two meetings and had to cancel with you in one day. I'm getting sweaty just thinking about that day. But, a lot of that was just, it was a combination of life with renovating an apartment and, you know, and deciding at the worst possible time, I wasn't going to look at my calendar for 24 hours and not intentionally, but yeah. I might cut this whole part out.
We've all been there at some point in business.
Oh man. Yeah. Literally sweating over that day. But anyway, all of that, like the agency piece of just going, I got into this for the freedom, you know, I don't want life to look like this.
Yeah.
So did you have systems and processes in place that were helping you? You grew to a pretty healthy amount. Did you have teammates and people? What was the process like for you?
Yeah. So originally at the beginning of the agency, there was nothing, no teams, no systems, no nothing. It was just like, I'm going to quit the W-2, figure out what's on the other side and see if I can find a client. I had kind of like random tangent story that brings it back to this. I had gotten a bartending job when I was 21. And the way that I got the job is because I got introduced from a friend of mine who was also consequently the town drunk. I got introduced from him to the bar owner. And when I got introduced to the bar owner went to the manager and was basically like, I don't want to talk to this guy. Can you talk to him? But the way that he said it was, this is Mike. He's looking for a job. Please talk to him. So the manager heard from the owner above him who was like, find this guy a job.
Yeah. Right?
And I saw it all happening in real time. I was like, that's not what he meant, but that works out really well to my benefit. And then we wound up becoming really good friends. I grew the bar to a great, you know, two nights a week, three nights a week that I worked and really did a lot of growth there. So when I quit, I took that knowledge. When I quit the W-2 job, I was like, I'm not good at sales, and selling marketing services is like what every marketer thinks they're going to be great at because that's what they're great at. Right.
Right.
So I didn't want to be like just another ad or just another lead magnet or just another email that pops into their inbox. So what I did is I decided to go a different route, the bartending route essentially, and partner with web developers that built e-com shops and said, smart. When you're done, I'll give you a kickback if you introduce me to the owner and tell the owner, like, you're not going to get traffic unless you have something driving that traffic. Here's Mike. Mike knows how to drive traffic.
Yeah.
Right. So I got that like kind of side door partnership instead of just knocking on door to door, if you will, in the space. And that worked out really well. And I got a handful of clients at $400 or $500 a month, like nothing big. And I was able to onboard the W-2 company that I was working for. So I actually got a 5% raise to work remote and work with them on the condition that whenever they found somebody else to hire, that I would help train them. So yeah. That worked out really well. We had a really good end of our career together. I stayed friends with them for years after that. And they, nice. They found a guy that wanted to work in-house that did a really good job. So it was a really win-win situation. And it gave me 6 months runway with a raise in order to find yeah. enough clients to basically pad that.
Yeah, nice.
So it was chaotic. I was working 16 hours a day just trying to find clients, build a, you know, what a contract would look like, an SOP, all that kind of stuff. And yeah. and it, I mean, it took me a decade, you know, to really dial everything in when I exited. Yeah. But it was probably the first 4 years were stumbling, figuring out systems, you know, trying to put that together. And then I ran into, you know, a couple project management templates and or softwares, I guess.
Yeah.
Put a couple of those together and then really went to some like formal education on or courses on systems and how all of that works. And that's where I like really started to fall in love with the business side of it.
Yeah.
And then a buddy of mine, a good friend of mine, actually from bartending, he called and he was like, "Hey, I really want to learn the ad stuff. Can we work together?" So for about a year, year and a half, we worked as he was contracting for me while he had a W-2. And yeah. then when he went to quit his W-2, he was like, "I'm either going to work for you full time. And if I do that, I need benefits for my, you know, wife and kids, or I'm going to go find another job that can offer that. And then I can't work for you anymore." So that was yeah. a big push point for me to be like,
"Yeah,
this is it." And yeah. We wound up figuring it all out. I hired him full time, hired another contractor. We got full benefits for everybody. And that was about 4 years in, I want to say 4 or 5 years in. Yeah. And then since then we grew, before we sold, I grew the team to 5 full time and 6 independent contractors. And then nice. A bunch of services. We had an accountant and a graphic design service and whatnot that we used.
Yeah. Were your contractors US based or global talent?
Both. We had yeah. some in Brazil, some in India, one in the Philippines, and then 3 or 4 that were here in the States.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So what pushed you to the point where you wanted to exit? Was it just ready for something new? Was it stress? What was that?
A joking conversation with a good friend of mine. He was like, we were talking about the stress and we'd gone through 2 election series, and election years are just rough. Just because there's going to be turbulence economically and we don't know necessarily how it's going to affect, but it's going to affect something. And then Facebook had a big update called iOS 14 that changed the way that they tracked and like results mm-hmm. for a lot of our companies. There were companies that were doing $6-7 million a year that dropped down to about $400,000 a year because they were fully reliant on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was watching firsthand people sell warehouses, lay off staff, like all sorts of stuff. And there was, I will say, nothing in our power that we could have done. And I say that because I was grind, like every day I was like connected with these people. I was like, we can do this together. It's great. And then all of a sudden it just fell out. And when that update happened, the next election was coming up and all that, I was like, I can't, physically, my body just can't take the beating anymore.
Yeah, totally.
So we were just venting to each other about this. And he was like, "Would you sell if you got 1x multiple on your business?" And I was like, "Absolutely not. It's worth 5 or 6. Had no idea what I was talking about. I'd never looked at selling a business in my entire life.
Yeah.
And it kind of opened my eyes and I was like, 1x multiple. I was like, that's actually a decent chunk of change for it. And then AI happened, OpenAI came out, or ChatGPT came out with all their stuff. And I saw what that was doing to other industries. And I was like, our industry is going to, it's not going to disappear. Marketing will be there, but what we do on a daily basis is going to completely change in the next 3 to 4 years. And all of the processes that I'd put together, all of the systems that I put together, all of the training that I'd put into my teams was going to be null, like just nothing for nothing anymore. Yeah. And I started thinking about it and I was like, I don't want to rebuild it. Like, I don't mind working in it, but I don't want to rebuild it and I'm going to have to rebuild it. So then I talked to a broker and it's worth the business was worth significantly more than 1x valuation. However, I was going off gross revenue and he's going off net revenue. So, so it was very ambiguous on how you looked at it, but the sum actually wound up being almost the same.
Yeah.
And once he finished the appraisal on it, I was like, all right, what's the worst that'll happen? I was like, let's put it up and see what happens. He expected a year and it sold in 4 months.
Nice. Who did you go through?
Eric, I'll have to look up his name. Eric Broadbeimer or something. Okay. Like that. He's awesome.
Yeah.
He was absolutely fantastic. I'd highly recommend him. I'll give you his, the business name and URL and put it in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. No, it like sometimes business brokers are awesome. And then you have the other 90% of business brokers, in my opinion. So
I interviewed three and Eric did not make the cut. And he was too, he was very nice, but very monotone, not excited about it. The other two disappeared. And, and like, just talking to him, I was like, either you're like, you don't care. You're just too busy. I don't know what it was, whatever their reasons were, they basically disappeared. And I was like, Eric, let's move forward. And, every minute after that, I was like, this guy is fantastic. Like he answers all of his questions efficiently. He got all the documents prepared well. He found a buyer that was, you know, qualified and able to go through. He actually found three, which I was really surprised by. And then I had to kind of vet which one would run the business post sale the way that I thought was best for the employees. So
And has that gone? What was the transition good and did it go well? And
no. it did not. I feel a little bit like caught off guard. I thought I was selling it to a family and it wound up that like just one individual in the family was going to run it and it was the individual least experience. So since then it's been a little bit chaotic on that side. And I've done what I can to help, but at the same time it's not mine anymore. So
Did you get a one-time payment or was there a big portion of it that was earn out? Or
there's 10% earn out. So 10% okay. refinance for 5 years with a balloon at the end of 5 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. So most of it. So was you got. And I was okay with that.
Yeah. Nice. That's really how you want it as the seller, because like you said, you have no control over the earn out really at that point. And so,
Well, you wanna, so the one thing that I did change that I'm happy that I did is there's two parts. So I wanted to increase the price from their counter offer.
Yeah.
And so the way that I increased it was through that payout structure, the owner finance structure. But the contingency on the owner finance structure is that it was personally guaranteed, not guaranteed by the business.
So it's
personally guaranteed by an individual instead of by the company. So it gives me a little bit more protection as long as she's
So that's really cool. Yeah. Well, good for you. I know that's kind of a lot of business owners' dream at some point is to have a successful exit and then, you know, go on to other things. And so you've jumped into short-term rentals, STR, thehideaways.co is where you're, assets sit online at least. Tell us how did you get into that and how's that journey been?
That journey started, so I sold the business in 2023. That journey started in 2020. My mother actually moved to Seattle where I was living at the time, and I had enough money to saved up to buy a house, but I didn't want to buy one in Seattle because I didn't want to stay there. I wasn't married at the time. I just didn't have any like roots to that. What I wanted to do was get in an RV and drive around from drop zone and skydive everywhere.
Yeah.
I wound up doing some of that later, but she was living there and she was paying $3,300 a month for a furnished 500 square foot apartment in Lower Queens.
Oh my goodness.
Scott. Yeah. And that is insane. I was like, this is just insane. And when I would go over there and visit, it was full of bartenders and restaurant workers and whatnot. All these people that I had been really good friends with when I was 21. But she was not 21 anymore, obviously.
Right.
And I was like, why are you here? You know? So I asked her one day, I was like, if you had a house with a yard and, you know, rooms for guests and things like that, would you be interested if it didn't cost you any more money? And the reason that the big motivator behind it was that her work is reimbursing her for rent since she's a traveler. Okay. So I was like, if it's, you know, tit for tat on the cost scale, would you be interested in that? She said, yes. So I found a house and asked her, I was like, do you like this house? And she said, yeah. So I bought it. I didn't buy her house. I didn't have enough money for that. But I bought it. And since we have different last names, I just rented it to her. I was her landlord.
Yeah.
And her work paid her rent, which gave me a significant amount of profit each month. And after that, my eyes kind of opened up to like, well, in the marketing agency, I'm being paid a decent amount of money to be there, to be present, to answer emails, to do the work and the services. In the real estate side, I'm being paid to stay away from the property, right? If somebody else is renting it, they don't want me there, right? So it was a whole different thing. And interest rates at the time were 2.5. Like it was just a win-win-win scenario all the way around. So at that point, I was like, well, I wonder if I could do this again. So I started looking up cheaper houses because Seattle's very pricey. So I started looking up cheaper houses and found the Spokane market. And the Spokane, I think, is just positioned to explode the next decade. And so I found a house out there and I did it again. And that was where I got introduced to Airbnb. And so I put it out there. I found a good deal on a house. I wanted to try Airbnb, so we had to furnish everything. But I had a safety net of if Airbnb doesn't work, the midterm rental market, which requires the exact same setup, the midterm rental market was really good. So it's a little bit less money, 3 month leases instead of, you know, 7 day leases or whatever rentals. But it's still, I didn't have to unfurnish the house. I didn't like everything stayed the same. So I could kind of play both at the same time. And that wound up doing really well on Airbnb. So that was when I started to like fall back on some of my older skill sets, right? The customer service and the emotional intelligence from bartending really played well into conversations with guests. Right. Yeah. So I started to do that. I started to find the ways, like the trigger points to really build rapport, the things that they really expected when they were there, and just fell in love with it. And then I joined, I wanted to like really do some more education on how to find better deals. I told everyone, like I wound up getting three houses. So it was the one in Seattle and then two in Spokane. And I told everyone, I was like, I got three houses and zero good deals. Right. And it was because I didn't know negotiation. I didn't know anything about real estate and like figuring out what to look for and what not to look for. And all of my goal was just to break even. I had the marketing agency at the time. I did not need to make money on them. I knew that if I broke even today, then in 10 years, I'd be in a really good place. And I firmly believe in investing in my future self. So that was my goal. And then after the third one, I was like, I'm hearing about these other people that really like negotiate, you know, the deal, know what to look for inspection wise and what not to. And I wanted to learn more of that. So I joined a mastermind and really started figuring out like how to look at different markets, how to look at different specific assets of a property and figuring out which ones are worth what and whatnot. And that's, it just grew like my love for it, the depth that I went in it and all that was just like soaring at that point. And that was 2021, 2022. And that was about when the conversation started for the marketing agency sale is when AI came out and it all just kind of like all these random things just kind of like formed into a line in my mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is, if it's possible, if I put it up for sale and I open that window, right.
Yeah.
And then I need to explore that. And like I said, we had it up for sale for a quoted 12 months and sold in four. And I was like, well, here goes nothing. So
my wife and I bought an apartment building right out of college when we were working for that Fortune 250. In fact, we had said
was it an apartment building or an apartment
like a four unit. And at the time, like, I mean, the numbers when I look back then is like, oh my goodness, it was so easy in comparison. That when we bought that, like I want to say it was Scranton, Pennsylvania. So it wasn't like a thriving metropolis, but it was something like mortgage, taxes and insurance were, like 40 some percent of the income, you know, like we lived in one of the units when we got married and we still made money every month, you know, it just was. Yep. It was stupid easy in comparison. It didn't seem so at the time, but we actually had thought, should we do this for 5 years? Like, should we just keep working this job? And that was the only temptation was we were like, we could work these jobs for 5 years and buy two of these a year and then we're set for life, you know, in 5 years. Yep. And we really felt like we prayed about it and really felt like God was like, no, you know, go to the mission field. And
that's cool.
I thought that was for 2 to 5 years and it turned into 22 and a half years. So the longer we were overseas, I was like, okay, when we come back, we're really going to have to figure this out. Cause I never thought we were going to be lifelong missionaries. So we didn't like raise support as such, but right now, the thing that I'm really intrigued by is co-living stuff, like kind of these 1 year, you know, like I've run the numbers on this place and like we literally could set this up for co-living, go to Thailand and we wouldn't have to work again a day in our life. You know, that's living in Thailand. But I tried to get one about a month and a half ago and like, it's crazy. The numbers on it, like this, the one I was looking at a month and a half ago, right here, 6 minutes from my house would have cash flowed like $5,000 a month, you know? And so it's just crazy what you can do with some of those, you know? So in our neighborhood,
having a unit large enough to rent out, like basically per room and have everybody live together in that per room, right?
Yeah. So you rent a one room to one person and you don't furnish it. You just furnish the common areas, no TVs. And I just invested in a system to kind of help walk through the process of that. But that's going to be our next foray back into real estate. But the agency is the main thing now. So I'm a few years behind you on the agency to real estate path.
Yeah.
But
honestly, it's fun. The build up is fun. The building systems is fun. What you learn with that is fun. You know, I had an opportunity to break apart the business and then fix some things or sell. And I think the biggest driver for me, like what we're doing in the short-term rental space is very similar in terms of the build up, the sales, the systems and all that. The difference is the product. And that makes a difference. And then the two P's that we talk about, the product and the passion. My passion fell into real estate. One of the things that really stood out to me was the tangible assets, right? When I sold the business, is a decent sale. But what I realized at the end of it is I had $4,000 in MacBook Pro computers. And that was the only tangible part of my business. Everything else was the systems, the people, the contracts. When we furnished our first Airbnb, I was like, this is a structure, you know, this could be here. It's been here for 100 years. It could be here for another 100 years. It's full of like stuff and things like that. But the other part was the product, and the product that we put out there is like relaxation, time with your family, rest, right? We're not selling a house. We're selling those experiences. We're selling like you being able to disconnect from work and stress and go here and visit your kid's graduation from college or, you know, go to there's a couple like polo fields around there, go to a big polo match or something like that. And it was just the I don't know, the vibes, if you will. From one side to the other were completely transformative. And then my faith journey, when I met my wife, my current wife, well, my wife who wasn't my wife at the time, I guess kind of wife's not the right term. She really introduced me to some awesome like small groups and whatnot. And that was when it started to really weigh on me what the marketing side was doing and all that. So,
yeah. So I just threw up your hideaways here on the screen, but tell me a little bit about that. When you said she introduced you to some small groups, what was that? What was going on there?
I grew up Lutheran and my grandpa was a pastor. We always went to church. And because of that, it was just something that was always there. It was never something I dove deep into. It was never something that I met a couple of friends that were younger than me and they were like, oh yeah, I like read the Bible and like this thing stood out to me. And I was like, hold on, you like read it? You know, like I always carried it, but I never really, like, we opened it when the pastor said like turn to, you know, Luke chapter 4, whatever. And we would open it then, but I never really sat down and like explored. And within the small group, that's exactly what we did. And it really just opened my eyes in, I want to say like 5 years ago. And it was never something that it wasn't a transformative experience. Like I wasn't Christian than I was. Like I always just was.
Yeah.
It was like, I just was, you know?
Yeah.
And now I was like, oh wait, this is actually like, it's really cool. There's like some really neat stuff in here and I need to like learn and teach myself and all that.
Totally.
And then these guys that I bumped into at the Hideaways, there's like two sides to it. There's the property management side, then there's the investment side. Property management side, I partnered with my mom, which has been an absolute blast. She loves it. And then the investment side, I partnered with two fellow Christians who are Jordan and Brett. And we're running all of basically the fund and the social side and content and all that.
Nice.
In all of them, everybody that we're partnered with, aside from a couple of investors, but everybody that we partnered with are Christian. And that part has been really exciting because it's become part of our pitch decks. It's become part of our like outreach in the area. And, you know, by its nature, what we're doing is increasing the visitors to a small town in eastern Kentucky, a small town in southern Ohio.
Cool.
And in doing that, there's a lot of harm that comes with that because people have lived there for 100 years and now all of a sudden there's, you know, a million tourists that are there.
Yeah.
And we're not bringing the tourists, but we are giving them a place to stay. We're making it more enjoyable, more conversation and whatnot. So it's really important to us to continue to give back, to continue to pour into that area. So we have right now some systems built up that my wife is helping lead on how to train like some of the people that are cleaning right now, how to train them to continue to grow with us so that they can hire staff, they can run their own business. Just pouring in like time-wise, like I'm going out there Wednesday to sign on a new house, but then we're going to go sit down and buy a couple of cleaners breakfast and talk to them about like, if we get 6 more houses here, what do you want your life to look like with that? You know, do you want to just manage these two? Do you want to grow something on your own? Do you need training? How can we pour into you as an individual and you as a community? And then we also have systems set up to donate to some of the local charities, churches, halfway houses, like little things like that in each area. So
that's cool. I actually have become friends with a real estate investor in Christiansburg and Blacksburg. And one of the things that he's done is he's helped a number of people get involved. Like one person start to develop their own like management company and another person to start a cleaning company. Yes. And when I was there, he was helping this person get started like doing photography for Airbnbs and homes and different things. And so part of what...
there's a guy you need to look up named Sean Tobin.
Okay.
And I will hope that everybody will go visit his stuff 10 times more than mine. He is one of the most motivational people I have ever met. But he was my realtor for my first house in Spain.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And since then we've become really good friends and gone over and met his kids and wife and whatnot and had a bunch of dinners together. But he is doing something very similar. And he also has conversations. I think he has 25 rentals or so right now that he owns and then a property management company on top of it. But one of the things that he does is he builds a rapport with all of his tenants and any of his tenants that are looking to advance their life after this, right? Buy a house.
Yeah.
They're renting from him so that they can buy a house in the future or something along those lines. He saves 10% of all the rent that they give him. And then doesn't tell them. And then at the end of their stay, when they go to that next point in their life, when they've already saved up, you know, enough for down payment and all this, he says, hey, I saved this for you because I want to give you like that boost, right? Right as you get there. And you know how it is, like stressful. You buy a house, you got to furnish it and all that. And he just hands them 10% of their own rent back, which I thought was just so beautiful. But now he's completely changing his entire business. He bought was gifted, but somehow got into this big commercial property downtown. And it's from what I understand, I haven't seen it yet, but from what I understand, the way he described it to me, it's 3 stories. He's going to use 1 story for his realtor and lending arm. Then the other story is going to be co-working space, but a lot of the co-working space is donated to people that are starting these businesses and want to do that. And he's going to bring in like the WeWork style or the Y Combinator style. He's going to bring in attorneys and other people to really guide them on how to do it correctly. And then in the bottom, he's going to have little shops. So barber shops, chiropractor shops, that kind of thing that he rents. And some of them will be just straight retail based. And then some of them will be the same thing when he hears about someone starting and needs, you know, whether it's a discount or some advice or a place to work or something like that, he'll be able to give back to them. And it was, I don't know, to me, just having that like central hub for so many people to advance their own lives and like pour into those individuals. It's like, I was like, man, that's my dream right there. Like I'm
for him.
So
that's really cool.
I
will definitely check him out. One of the things actually, like this, the BAM School podcast that we're on, the school that we started is Business Adventure and Mission. And one of my goals is for people to have, to be able to make a living. So right now there's ways for people to come alongside the agency where they just get clients, we do the work, and then they really can have 20 hours a week to do whatever it is they feel like God has created them to do. And specifically we have like discipleship training to help people make disciples in a relatively easy way. Like when you were talking about reading the Bible, we have something called Ask Discipleship at askdiscipleship.com. And the core of it is just asking another person, hey, do you want to read like 20 to 25 chapters of the Bible with me this week? And then we'll talk about it. And then when we talk about it, we just go, hey, how does this apply to our lives? You know? And it's like, it's the simplest discipleship model I've ever seen or been a part of, but it's also pretty transformative. Like, you can't really read, you know, like the book of James five times and not walk away with anything at the end of the week, you know, that applies to your life. So, similar. Go ahead.
That part to me is just huge where, you know, I've talked to my wife a lot about that, where it's like just allowing these windows to be, you know, this open. It's like, hey, if you're interested, it's here. Right. And the moment that someone says, hey, can you do this with me? It's like, oh my gosh, like we made it.
Yeah.
You just asked a question. That's all we need. Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Well, thanks so much for your time. This was really fun for me just to hear part of your journey and see some of this. Well, real quick. So you have three different locations that you're working on here. You're also, you're increasing the Red River right now, right? That's where you're building some new ones.
Yeah. So we tested out all of these Blue Ridge, Hocking Hills, Ohio. And they're great. Blue Ridge is great. Hocking Hills is great. They're both just saturated and have really high competition. Red River Gorge is the needle in a haystack right now.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely amazing. So we have five places there today that are live, and we have 8 acres that we're building six unique cabins on right now. And then 72 acres across the street that we're looking at getting, but doing a fundraise for right now.
Yeah, cool. So if anyone's interested, you can find out more about Mike at thehideaways.co up there and check out his properties. He's on Instagram at Matt Mike with two I's in there. One T, two eyes. And I've actually passed off some of your stuff. When I was just in Denver, one of my friends has a couple Airbnbs that he does there. And so I was like, hey, listen to this, you know, because you just had some really great content on there. If somebody's looking to get into STRs, super great stuff on there. So thanks so much, Mike. Anything that I should have asked you and didn't, or anything else you want to say before we jump off?
No, it's just it's awesome getting to know, you know, new people in the space, especially the business and faith overlap. Like, it's my favorite place to be in right now. So I appreciate you reaching out. I appreciate getting on and chatting with you. And again, being so flexible as we adjusted dates around.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mike. It was great having you on the pod.
BAM School, facilitating a global self-funding disciple-making movement through business. Thanks for tuning in to the BAM School Podcast. Find show notes, free courses, resources, and more at 4BAM.com.